It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security. Welcome to America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host for today, Ed Hoglund. I'm a retired senior federal executive and U.S. Air Force veteran with over four decades of service as a senior executive in the intelligence community and departments of defense, homeland security, energy, and state. I've been a senior advisor to several IT agency heads, the Assistant Inspector General for Inspections for the intelligence community, chairman of CIA Strategic Planning, a deputy team lead for the INF, on-site nuclear arms inspections in the former Soviet Union, and an award-winning CIA analyst. I'm currently an independent consulting focusing on cognitive warfare, which is a topic we'll be discussing today. I'm going to cover three key questions. What is cognitive warfare? Why is it the existential threat to America? Secondly, is cognitive warfare understood by our DOD? And I'll take a DOD perspective and discuss how that relates to cognitive warfare. And then what are the goals of our adversaries in this cognitive war? And if time, I may go on to some other areas. American Out Loud Radio plays on iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen to our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps available on Apple, Android, and Alexa, where we stream 24/7. And now you can also hear them on the podcast on those same apps. So let me get to today's subject here. The vision of America Out Loud is to build a new and educational destination that would focus on new stories and inspiring stories that spotlight human spirit, thought leaders, and folks that can lead, that are leaders and more, and help in a more informed life. My intent in these segments is just that, because after four decades in national security, I want to pass on some of my knowledge, some of my understanding and awareness, and insights to you to make you aware and enable you to engage, to advance the resilience and security of our republic. Information is power. It's always interesting to me how many people hang on to information, keep it to themselves, and use that to advance their own position. What they don't seem to understand is that information is power, but every individual has an inordinate amount of power themselves in terms of how they handle that information, how they use that information, and whether they choose to share it or not. Information is power, and the power of the pen and ideas has been and will forever be the most potent power and force for the human race. I'll cover the essence of cognitive war and how it relates to everyday politics issues and the resilience and security of our republic. I promise you to always give you my best unvarnished analysis and assessments of today's issues. And I'll provide you with a historical perspective at times in different contexts and that history. Now, broadcasting is not my necessary sweet spot, but I wanted to make sure that I brought my information, my background, my knowledge to you to help you understand what's going on in today's world and hopefully help you to, again, ensure the resilience of a republic. Because I have basically just two objectives. One is to ensure the resilience of a republic, our constitution, and our freedoms. And two is to avoid an unnecessary kinetic war. And that's why today I'm going to talk specifically about cognitive warfare. And throughout all the segments I'll have on this program, I'll continue to come back to cognitive warfare because it is the existential threat to our republic, to our democracy, and to our freedoms. So I always like to start with, what's the real problem or challenge here And what's the real problem we're facing? Because if you can't define the problem, then you can't come up with solutions to how to fix that problem. The problem statement, I'll put it in this way here. We are in an ongoing cognitive war that is taking place in the most critical of all domains, the cognitive domain, or the human mind. To address the challenges facing our country in this war, we must first be able to clearly define the problem. And so there are four aspects that immediately come to mind in the cognitive war and this problem set. The first is we must move from a predominantly reactive to a proactive posture. And why is that? Because if one is solely responding to an adversary in a defensive position, you're in a losing proposition. The second problem we face is that technology is not the problem, albeit a lot of people think it is. It's defining the problem. And this is why our intelligence community, our defense and homeland security elements have been and continue to be focused on chasing shiny technologies, shiny objects, not knowing what the real problem is, and therefore not able to solve the problem that's before them. So we waste billions, if not trillions, of dollars needlessly. And a perfect aspect here of this is the third problem, that we are in the midst of a cognitive war and our focus remains near solely on kinetic solutions in the shiny objects. If our only solution is the hammer that we use every day as a kinetic solution, then we tend to default to that solution. But when you take a look at this in a historical context, when we look at every war we've fought since World War II, we have lost those wars, or at best, ended up in a truce. It's really amazing. So if you take a look at, for example, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, even the Gulf War, and Afghanistan after that, what happened there? What happened is we won certain aspects of the kinetic battle, but we never won the cognitive battle, the cognitive war. So the fourth big problem is that, and this goes to the foundation of the institutions I just mentioned, our biggest hurdles are cultural and structural. We require new production lines. We basically require a new factory floor and the overhaul of our national security apparatus. Now, I'll go into some other episodes and discuss about the national security apparatus, its weaponization and other things, and really what and how we actually do things to overhaul that. But it's really important that with these four problem sets here, that we move from a reactive to proactive posture. The technology is not the problem, it's defining the problem. That we're in the midst of a cognitive war, but our focus remains on kinetics. And our biggest hurdles are cultural and structural. And we need to overhaul the factory floor to get this new capabilities to fight the cognitive war. That's a challenge before us. Our military industrial complex and intelligence community were formed after World War II in the industrial age, with industrial age policies and industrial age cultures. And they worked very, very well for a number of decades. But we're now in the information age. And with the information age and the democratization of technology, we see that adversaries from a single individual to nation states can cause mass chaos, anarchy, and impact with the use of information. Remember, information is power. And they can do so at a moment's notice in a variety of different ways. So people can follow up on a number of these different areas that I speak to on my blogspot, the informationequilibrium.blogspot.com. AmericaOutloud.com, and this will be posted on the network, so you can go there. What I'm going to talk next to is a part of a paper called The Future Military Intelligence Concept of Operations, an S&T Roadmap, 2035 to 2050, The Cognitive War. This is a paper I wrote back in my departing days as a federal executive in the Department of Defense and intelligence community. I did so for a primary reason, is that for over three decades before that, I saw what was happening. And what I mentioned is that we've lost every war since World War II, less a stalemate in the Korean War, because we ended up withdrawing or running away in seven different ways and ceding the ground to adversaries in this cognitive war. And this is why you need to pay attention and understand what cognitive warfare is. It is primarily an ideological war between tyranny and freedom, control and independence, subjugation and democracy. But a critical point to understand here is a lot of people today talk about America moving to socialist or communist, far left. This is part of the cognitive war, is that those utopian ideas and such are just part of the effort in this cognitive war. A critical point is to understand here, the cognitive war uses a variety of different ways and means to achieve its end. A good strategy has its ways and means integrated to achieve a desired end. So in the cognitive war, the ongoing cognitive war, which is taking place both globally and domestically, we find a very various number of ways that are used. So ideology is used, communism, fascism. Religion is used. You've seen the radical aspects of Islam and ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or different issues. So you've seen various issues from, in the United States, abortion, to social justice issues, to anti-war movements. So there's a variety of ways our adversaries use cognitive war to fight us. And there's also then a variety of means they use to employ those ways, including academia, military, legal, social, economic, agricultural, social welfare systems, etc., to influence others and to impact things. So, example, in academia and education, we've seen how education over the last several decades has been usurped by those individuals who'd like to indoctrinate and use the various ideologies that they have, indoctrinate our children into thinking about America in a bad way, and looking at utopian socialist ideas in a good way. In the military recently, we've seen the military forced to undergo CRT, critical race theory training, ideologically racist training. And we've seen the impacts of that as people flee the military and the recruiting numbers drop like a rock. So cognitive warfare is not just limited to the information space, the information warfare, and ideology, religion, and such. It does include irregular warfare at times, guerrilla warfare, and it does at times include the use of kinetic weapon systems. The key is to understand that this war has been ongoing for more than a millennium, and that it's timeless as mankind exists. And the key aspect here is it is truly the existential threat to America occurring both globally and domestically. And the reason why this is because it's deceivingly undertaken in a methodical manner to disrupt and undermine our way of life, our political, social, economic justice systems, education systems. And it's been done so over decades based on lessons learned from efforts prior and failures prior to hone and skill their efforts, our adversaries' efforts, whether domestic or globally. But if we remain unaware and unprepared and unarmed, we lose. And this is a key aspect for not only us to understand, the citizens of America to understand, but critically important for our politicians from all parties to understand. Because at this point in time, they fail to understand that the cognitive war is the existential threat, that we are actually in a cognitive war, a war by other means. And then unless we address this, then we have the prospect of losing our country to adversaries who wish to subjugate us and have a wholly different way of life. Before I go on a quick break here, be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We must all do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future.
We are fighting the ultimate fight between good and evil. AmericaOutLoud.com replaces groupthink with innovative think. Well, it was Walt Whitman, the poet, who said, "Keep your face always toward the sunshine, and shadows will fall behind you." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
Welcome back. My name is Ed Hoglund. I'm your host for today, an intelligence expert, DoD expert, 40 plus years of experience. And I just want to let you know that all of our shows go to podcasts typically a day or two after the broadcast is heard on talk radio. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, and iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe on the Apple Podcasts as well. With that, let me go ahead and continue on with the discussion of cognitive warfare and dissect some of this. So as I mentioned, a good strategy ties to ways and means to achieve a desired end. Again, this isn't about just communists. This is about power and control and subjugation using information, using even guerrilla warfare and kinetics at times to deceive, subvert, and subjugate others via their own means of government, justice system, and national security elements, and in some cases, even the military. And we're seeing that today. This is about gaining absolute power. It's not about communism or socialism, in my opinion. This is about gaining absolute power. That's the real end game here. Communism is viewed as an intent. The intent is absolute power. And as I talked about, there are many ways by which and means by which our adversaries try to subjugate us. So China uses ideology of global communism and utopian vision as a front. But we see multiple variants of capitalism in China itself. But what they do is they use different means of control of the people, of the social system, and of the information in China to subjugate their people. They use mass surveillance. They use social credit scoring. They imprison the opposition. They use genocide of the opposition to enforce control. And we saw this with the COVID lockdowns in China after the release and weaponization of the virus against the United States. So China has, in this global cognitive order as a multifaceted strategy. They steal our research and development via our U.S. universities and research centers. They integrate themselves within our Department of Defense elements and think tanks and other organizations, and they use those positions to then extricate information and send it back to benefit their own country. They indoctrinate our own people with a variety of different aspects of information, and they use it, such as using the Confucius Institute. And then they collect data for future and current targeting. So you've heard many cases recently about TikTok. TikTok may seem like a neat tool, social media tool, but it's actually a collection system. And coming in from the intelligence community, collection systems are very important. What do they collect? They collect data on you and every citizen in America. They collect data on who you're tied to, what you like, where you go, even in some cases down to the keystrokes on your computer. So what do they use this data for? Well, they use this data from TikTok, WeChat, along with other data. For example, the OPM data they stole from America that had over a million mass security experts, both private information, including myself. They stole that information. And they can combine that with additional information on DNA from genealogical study elements, and also from like 23andMe and other areas where they get DNA data. And with that conglomeration of data, they have a means to then target an individual with information that links to their profile, to what they like, what they don't like. And with that link to information and understanding their social layout and what they do online every day, they can influence you in ways you would never think of, because they do it subtly and they do it as part of a normal game stream. But they can also take that same data and weaponize it against you to target you as an individual. So let's take COVID, for example. If they had a similar type bioweapon, they could then take the TikTok data, the DNA data, the OPM data, and they could target every single senior leader in America very specifically. Now, Russia, so I'll switch to Russia for a second. Russia also uses cognitive warfare, but it's more focused on propaganda, disinformation, and different ways to disrupt and drive division internal to other nations like America here. Now, we've seen that with what they've done with a variety of different aspects. Now, domestically, so I talk a little bit globally with Russia and China. So let me talk about domestically here. But domestically, there's a radical minority who's taken charge of the Democratic Party. Today's Democratic Party is not the Democratic Party I understood growing up from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. In this case, the way they're going about things are using social issues such as education, abortion, and equity. And the means are the indoctrination in our education systems, the weaponization of our national security apparatus, the use of extremist terrorist groups like BLM and Antifa to drive civil unrest, and then efforts such as defund the police. So all this is not new, as we've seen this movie play out multiple times in our history. As I said up front, the cognitive war is truly perpetual, but our memory's not. And most people aren't historians. Most people are focused on the day-to-day and the next few days ahead of them. But our adversaries aren't. Our adversaries think not only in the next few days ahead of them, they think about the next decade or century ahead of them. And a strategy, what's the strategy to then influence, impact, and drive America to its knees to subjugation, which is what their goal is. While we sit here in a tactical maneuver, reacting day by day in a losing posture. So again, we've seen this strategic war play out over several decades in a domestic cognitive war in America. For example, Americans joined the Communist Party in droves in 1918 through the 1920s. The Nazi Party was the next fetish of those without a brain, as the party grew in the 1930s with the fascists. And they were enamored with Hitler initially. And then we found the unhinged during the free love, drugs, and anti-war rhetoric of the 1960s, all fueled domestically and from abroad. So although there was a domestic element here, it was also fueled from a global element. And so there was always a nexus and synergy between the two of them. We saw a resurgence again with the nuclear scare, the red balloons of the 1970s and early 1980s, in the so-called anti-war moment, driven by the useful and naive idiots who opposed the deployment of nuclear weapons to counter Soviet expansion in Europe. But President Reagan nailed that coffin shut on the Soviets, and he helped drive and win the Cold War. The point here is, over the last 100 years, this scenario has been played out time and again. But the film keeps rewinding. It's just now with new technology and new pictures and better lives. So we've seen the strategic effort play out for decades in America, but I wanted to provide you a historical example of how it's being fought. Let me take a slight digression here for a second. I'll give you an example of how this cognitive war is being fought. The Americans, as I mentioned, had a Nazi fetish for those without a brain in the 1930s. Many historians and others nowadays refer to the Nazi Party as the far right, and the fascists as the far right. Why contest that definition? In fact, the Nazi Party, whose name was officially called the Nationalist Socialist German Workers' Party. Now let that sink in. The Nationalist Socialist German Workers' Party. It has its roots in Marxism and socialism. You hear me refer to a new term that I've coined. It's called commu-fascists, communists and fascists. They're one and the same. They're basically two ends of the same circle of tyranny. But why is it that the Nazis are referred to the far right? Well, simple from a cognitive perspective is people want to create a fictional enemy, wherein both ends of that circle are the same evil fighting for more of a socialist utopian element. And the communists didn't want to say they were fighting other socialists for absolute power. So we can't forget history and the pact between Stalin and Hitler. The Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact was a non-aggression pact between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union that enabled those powers to partition Eastern Europe amongst them. The pact was signed in Moscow in August of 1939 between Ribbentrop, a German foreign minister, and Molotov, the Soviet foreign minister, and is officially known as the Treaty of Non-Aggression between Germany and the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republics. Now, why was this? Well, they did this because a month later, they both then invaded Poland to bisect it and take it apart. So Stalin and Hitler, again, two ends of the same circle of tyranny. And what they did paved the way for the start of World War II. So we have to pay attention to history when we're looking at the cognitive warfare, because none of this is new. What's different, again, is the democratization of technology. And we've seen this play out in prior history as well in a variety of different areas. So let me refer back to the 45 goals of communism that were read into the congressional record by a Democratic Congressman, Albert Furlong Jr. from Florida in 1963. So this is 59 years ago. And let's review a few of those 45 goals. We're not going to go through the whole list here. You can look it up on the web, you'll Google it. Remember now, this is a Democrat congressman in Florida. 1963, 59 years ago. Let's see if any of the goals of communism sound familiar to today. The first, belittle American culture and discourage the teaching of American history. Discredit and eventually dismantle the FBI. I think they're doing a pretty good job of that too. Infiltrate and gain control of big business and unions, which this whole environmental ESG thing that you've seen the big banks and stuff jumping on now. Transfer some of the powers of arrest from police to social agencies. Didn't we just see with the BLM, Antifa, and other movements, a variety of these radical progressives on the left look to then create these social justice people who would replace the police? Another objective, treat all behavioral problems as mental health or social problems. So where are we at now? We have in most major progressive cities and other places, we have mass encampments of homeless who have mental illness and social issues. But what are they doing with that? They're advancing that by then also trying to usurp and infect the justice system to let these people out and to continue crime and felons and, instead of removing them and helping them from the streets. Another goal, again, remember, 59 years ago, discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Well, we saw the rise of the feminist movements through the 60s and 70s, and we saw the rise of single family parents, stuff like that. But what you also saw the rise in was massive welfare by those single mothers. And you've seen a decline in the American family as an institution. And where did you see that decline in the family as an institution most predominantly? It was an African-American Black community. Because in the 1950s, there's more like 75, 80% two-parent households. And today it's more like 20% or less. Lastly, another goal, emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Remember, these goals were laid out 59 years ago. But just a year and a half ago, we've seen Democratic former governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, tell parents they should have no place in the education of their children. So it's amazing how this is all taking place here. And it perpetuates, it repeats itself. Then let me switch gears a little bit and talk about, is the cognitive war understood by our Department of Defense? Because it's important to know, is our Department of Defense on top of this or not? So I'm going to take a short segue here and look at a DoD perspective. I'll be discussing some aspects of a paper that's called Outplayed, Regaining the Strategic Initiative in the Gray Zone. That's Outplayed, Regaining the Strategic Initiative in the Gray Zone. It was written by several authors, and it was published by the United States Army War College Strategic Studies Institute in June of 2016. So one of my side jobs as a consultant is I lecture every year at the Army War College on cognitive warfare. So this paper is an interesting paper, again, published in June of 2016. And what the DoD in this case, these gentlemen and ladies who wrote this paper speak to is into the new gray zone. And what they say, talk about is U.S. competitors are pursuing meaningful revision and rejection of the current U.S.-led status quo. And they're employing a hybrid of methods to advance and secure interests that are in many cases contrary to those of the United States. They talk about different ways and means up front. The challengers employ unique combinations of influence, intimidation, coercion, and aggression to incrementally crowd out the effectiveness of resistance to establish local and regional advantages and manipulate risk perceptions in their favor. Now, the DoD people who wrote this paper focused on our Chinese and Russian adversaries. And what they're saying is very true and very effective. But as I said up front, the cognitive war is taking place both globally and domestically. So in the gray zone, which these authors talk about, the awkward and uncomfortable space between traditional concepts of war and peace, where the United States and its defense enterprise face systemic challenges to the U.S. position authority, As a result, the gray zone in conflict should be Pacers for defense strategy, is what they ask. Now, the gray zone in cognitive warfare, there's an overlap in terms of much of the definition, stuff like that, but the cognitive warfare encompasses much more than just the gray zone. So the gray zone is to these folks a broad carrier concept for a universe of often dissimilar strategic challenges. Defense relevant gray zone threats lie between the classic war and peace, legitimate and illegitimate motives and methods, universal and conditional norms, order and anarchy, and traditional, irregular, unconventional means of warfare. All gray zone challenges are distinct or unique. Yet nonetheless, they share three common characteristics, is the contention of these authors. One is hybridity, menace to defense, military convention, and risks confusion. So all those aspects are key, and I'm going to follow up on those in just a minute here. But before we take a break here, you can find out more about my show and get all the latest podcasts if you go to the menu nav bar at AmericanOutLoud.com. Under our shows, our schedule, look for the NAS Security Hour. So again, all my shows go to podcast typically a day or two after the broadcast and are heard on talk radio. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure you subscribe and rate the show on the Apple Podcast for me, please. This will help me very much to understand if I'm getting my message across or not. With that, we'll take a break.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared. Sea level rise has not been unusual. And extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan, a plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
Okay, we're back now. So welcome back to American Out Loud Talk Radio. Plays on iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen to our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps available on Apple, Android, Alexa, where we stream 24/7. And now you can also hear them on the podcast on those same apps. Let's go back to the DoD description I was talking about, the DoD perspective, describing as a gray zone and how that relates to cognitive warfare that we've been talking about. With the defense and military strategists, the gray zone is a broad carrier concept for a universe of often dissimilar strategic challenges. The gray zone threats lie between the classic peace, as I mentioned before, and motives. And I talked about how the three different aspects, common characteristics, hybridity, menace to defense, and risk confusion. For the Department of Defense, strategists and planners, gray zone competition and conflict persistently complicate the military decision-making, deployment models, and force calculations. They often fall outside of defense concepts of war, yet they can can be rapidly or unexpectedly fall into a miscalculation and unintended calculation. And so what we're seeing today, from my perspective, in the war in Ukraine is tied to this. Because the Russians and Chinese are in fact fighting the cognitive war. They're fighting a war in the gray zone. And they're causing us to react. And they're causing us to react in ways that are escalating the situation in unintended manners. So as these authors note in their discussion of the gray zone, it's an imperative for the U.S. to adapt. The U.S. defense strategists and planners must dispense, as they say, with outdated strategic assumptions about the United States and its global position. They say, in fact, the United States defense enterprise should rely on three new core assumptions. First, that the United States status quo will encounter persistent, unmitigated resistance. Second, that resistance will take the form of the gray zone competition and conflict. And finally, the gray zone will confound U.S. strategists and institutions until it's normalized and fully accounted for in the DoD. So when I talked up front about the problem sets and the fact we have a military industrial complex that was formed post-World War II that has not kept up with the information age, this is exactly what I'm talking about these authors relate to. Because the dilemma is when you don't understand you're in a cognitive warfare, you don't really understand the problem, you can't really come up with proper solutions. And so we could take a look at the Afghan war as an example there. 20 years we fought in the Afghan war, 20 years. And every year, every 12 months, they had rotations of troops in and out. And they had generals like Petraeus and McChrystal and other folks with great accolades for their counterterrorism insurgency efforts. But what happened there? The Afghan war, as the Soviets found out, was never going to be a kinetic war. It's a cognitive war, a predominantly cognitive war. It is an ideological war, cultural war. And the Afghans waited out the Soviets, and the Afghans waited out the United States, the ISIS, the Al-Qaeda, the other terrorists, because they control the flow of manipulation of information in those areas by their tribes and by their cultures. And so we could kill as many ISIS leaders as we want. We could kill as many Al-Qaeda leaders as we want. But we're never going to win the Afghan war until we figured out it was actually a cognitive war and that we could fight it through various means and methods. And kinetic actions in some cases were necessary, but we're not going to be the primary means to win the war. So what the authors here state in their paper is right along those lines. And the consequences associated with failure to adapt the range of the different aspects cedes control of U.S. interests and erodes our place with determined competitors. And you see in the domestic cognitive war front, our president, Joe Biden, unilaterally withdrawed our forces and left our allies in chaos, left our troops in chaos, and lent to this decline of the perception of America. So you see a nexus again in this cognitive war between the domestic and global cognitive wars. And I'll go into this in another session, but our Manchurian president, Joe Biden, exemplifies a perfect Manchurian president. In my mind, my opinion, he's fully compromised. And by being fully compromised, he works in concert with our global adversaries in this cognitive war and ties into the domestic adversaries in this domestic cognitive war to continue to undermine the United States' position, economic power, military power in the world. So what are some findings and recommendations that these military authors have in terms of examining the gray zone challenge and such? Well, policy and strategy, they found there's no common perception of nature, character, or hazard associated with the gray zone or its individual threats or challenges. Consequently, there are gaps in strategic design, deliberate plans, defense capabilities, and ability to operate and succeed in the gray zone warfare. Well, this, again, go back to Cog War, same thing. You can have structure, you can have organization, you can have funding. But if you do not have a plan and strategy, if you do not have the capabilities and capacity, you do not have the means to win the cognitive war. You do not have the means to win the gray zone war. So there's lots of challenges here. I can go into much more, and I'll come back to this paper in a future segment. But the bottom line is, these folks talk about that we need to adapt and drive at its level of activism. And what they say is normalizing and accounting for DOD's burgeoning gray zone challenge relies on the socialization of two important concepts, adaptation and activism. They say the defense enterprise needs to adapt how it sees gray zone challenges, how it charters strategic action against them. And finally, how it designs, prioritizes, and undertakes the strategic action. All of these require a more robust and activist DOD response. To date, the United States favors approaches that are much more conservative. And the study suggests that continuing such approaches invites substantial and potentially irreversible consequences. I'm going to use that to then transition here in a segment. But just let that sink in for a second. Potentially irreversible strategic consequences. This is the existential threat to America, is this ongoing cognitive war gray zone. DOD is stuck on kinetic solutions when we're fighting a cognitive war. And because they're stuck on kinetic solutions, the cognitive dissonance exemplified in 20 years of Afghanistan war fighting and the loss of every other war since World War II is astounding. And the strength of the military industrial complex, the culturals and structural challenges I mentioned up front, one of the key problems, is something we have to face. So what are the goals of our adversaries in this ongoing cognitive warfare? So at the 10,000 foot level, the goal in this ongoing cognitive warfare is absolute power. It has been pretty much the same thing hundreds of years prior, and it will go into the future. The difference, as I mentioned before, the level of sophistication in the strategy, the use of information technology, social and mainstream media and government organizations at the federal, state, and local levels to advance their goals is truly something to admire how they've done that. Admire, but concurrently is terrifying because they've taken our economic, our educational, our social systems, our justice systems, and they've weaponized them against the American public to indoctrinate, subjugate, and intimidate. So why this is important? So I'll go back to a paper I mentioned up front in the Military Intelligence 2035 to 2050, a future prediction of where we need to be in intelligence. And I wrote this in February of 2019 to a wide audience across the intelligence, defense, and national security arena. And here's what I wrote. Unless we adjust our future concept of operations and investments to account for the paradigm shift that have occurred under our feet, our nation and its intelligence operations will once again awaken too late to a different reality, which is likely to end badly with significant and long-term impacts to our nation's security and place as world leader. I project such a negative and reactive outcome to occur either because we lost the cognitive war totally, our adversaries succeeded in undermining our institutions and democratic foundation to such an extent they are no longer viable, or because our efforts to counter the cognitive domain came too late. If we fail to act in the cognitive domain, we will likely end up in a major kinetic conflict resulting in devastating outcomes in physical and human toll. And recovery is questionable. Now, I wrote that back in February of 2019. And when I briefed senior DoD and IC leaders on this, I noted at the time we had a major cyber attack. That if we had a major cyber attack, our troops would not be able to get out of garrison. They'd be asked to leave their loved ones, knowing that within 48 hours, chaos would ensue and likely starvation because the food supplies would stop. And I was met with disbelief. But many of you on the East Coast here remember the Colonial Pipeline cyber attack that took place likely by Russian elements just a few years back. It shut down the whole East Coast, up down the whole East Coast. Gas was out in a day. Troops were stuck in garrison. They couldn't move anyplace else. DOD elements were stuck, right? We've seen the same thing with COVID and such. So what have we seen? I said, I project such a negative and reactive outcome to occur either because we lost the war, cognitive war totally, or adversaries succeeded in undermining our institutions. Well, we've seen our education, economic, electoral, social justice systems, and even the Supreme Court of the United States and military institutions undermined by both China and Russia and internal domestic elements. Or, as I said, because our efforts to counter in the cognitive domain came too late. Well, we saw the China flu, and we saw what COVID did. It killed over 1 million Americans and counting. It was the greatest intelligence failure in history, but you hear not a peep. Why? Because the military-industrial complex, the intelligence community and DoD are protecting their kinetic focus and their industrial age structures and cultures. When you have 1 million people die, it's called intelligence failure. Hello, news. China and Russia are depleting our national armament stockpile and driving us to spend ourselves into bankruptcy. This is part of their effort as well. Look at the war in Ukraine. They have a broader strategy in play here. They're depleting our weapon supply, plus they're causing us to drive up our national debt. Does anyone see the comparison to what China and Russia are doing to us now as to what we did to the former Soviet Union? Hello, Congress. You got to think past the next 2 days, step back and take a macro perspective here and understand this is a purposeful effort to bleed us dry in terms of our weapons and in terms of our economy, and drive us into a level of subjugation because we will not have the means to continue to fight. Lastly, I said, if we fail to act in the cognitive domain, we will likely end up in a major kinetic conflict resulting in devastating outcomes. So where are we headed today? What do you hear from the DOD people? What do you hear from the intelligence community? Everything's Russia, 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 and Ukraine, or China, 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 and Taiwan. As you heard a general just recently say, that we're on a 2-year march to war with China. The cognitive dissonance and stupidity is supreme, and there's no excuse for it. So we have to take a look at the cognitive war. It is truly the existential threat to America, to our resilience, to our Republican security. We have to understand that this cognitive war is going to continue. It's going to take place on both the global front, and it's going to take place on a domestic front. It's purposeful. It's well-planned. There's a strategic aspect of it, and it's tied into different various forces, both domestically and globally, whether the World Economic Forum and the Klaus Schwab Group, or domestically with the progressive extremists, who've driven up our crime rates, who've driven up our inflation, who've decimated our military readiness and recruiting, et cetera. The key here, ladies and gentlemen, is we are in a domestic cognitive war that is truly the existential threat to America. There's also a global cognitive war that's also occurring that we have to pay attention. So I appreciate you listening today. We'll follow up on this segment with some more talk about cognitive war for another historical and perspective issues related to this. But remember, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on iHeartRadio Network. You can listen to our media player from any web browser. Go to america.loud.com today for your daily stop for all your latest news and happenings. We must all do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future. And that's why I'm on this podcast, and why I'm on this broadcast today, because I want to help advance my four decades of experience and awareness and bring a new perspective to you, the American people, on the true existential threat we have and what we need to do to awaken our leadership to the real war, the ongoing cognitive war.